Hey everyone, just quick note about the podcast. We had recorded the whole thing, and right when we were ready to upload it, we saw that Noah Syndergaard was scratched. We're not going to record the entire podcast again. So just know Matt Harvey starting in place of Syndergaard. Ignore all the hot Syndergaard talk, and let's get it on. All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Thursday, April 27th. I'm Doug on a little bit of Tilt Nori, and that is
Doug Nori.
And we are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started, keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings. You can head over to the site and get a free 3-day trial to our projection system that's powered by Lineup Lab. That will give you optimal lineups for both FanDuel and DraftKings MLB, NBA while that's still going on, NFL when the time comes around. I know they got the draft for that tonight, so people are already getting their brain wrapped around NFL headspace, which just seems crazy to me. Anyway, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, about as good a deal as you will find in the industry. Buddy, I'm on Tilt, and it's not DFS Tilt. I'm on Podcast Tilt because we went through a Wednesday podcast where we had recorded a full, I would say, or 75% worth of just an absolutely amazing podcast. Like, I've never been better. You were pretty good. And then we were 10 minutes, so a third of the way through. So we totally lost that one. No recording available. Your computer just basically straight up dies from like a virus or something like that you claim happened. And then now we're getting into the do you even want to do the podcast zone, because we're 10 minutes into the other this podcast. And then I get a G-chat from you showing that your browser has crashed and we need to start the podcast over again. Are we going to be able to get through this one?
No promises. Let's go.
So we have a full, we have two shorter slates of baseball today. And we're going to try to get this out in time so that people can have access to some of what we've been thinking about for the 1 p.m. slate. There are, I think, 5 or 6 games at 1 p.m. and then 3 or 4 in the evening, something like that. It gets a little thrown off because St. Louis and Toronto were postponed yesterday, so they're playing a doubleheader. They're available on both slates today, which is always fun from a projection system standpoint because you need to switch things over at some point when the first game ends and the second one begins. So having a pretty good little Thursday, I would say, here to start. Austin and I did a podcast yesterday about, and we mentioned guys like Syndergaard and Martinez. I'll kind of roll through what we said there because Those two guys, they come in at the 1 o'clock and they are, I'll start here. Do you think Syndergaard, I thought he was going to be the chalk on a bigger slate last night and he didn't pitch. I'll get to guess him in a second, but do you think he ends up becoming the chalk play on the short slate here, especially for FanDuel?
Yeah, there's almost no question about it. I mean, he's just an ace-level pitcher with an ace-level matchup. He probably would have been chalk. Paxton wound up being chalk last night in a considerably worse matchup. Sure, Syndergaard's expensive, but we'll be able to find some value around the periphery there. So, yeah, get ready to see a lot of him out there.
Yeah, I think in terms of Syndergaard, there's probably, I would consider him to be probably like the second best pitcher in baseball behind Kershaw. Kershaw's like in a tier by himself. I kind of think Syndergaard's almost in a tier by himself too, like this 1A tier, and then there's a group of guys underneath him. You always have like a little bit of an injury concern there with him, but after Kershaw, I don't think like Syndergaard hasn't walked a guy yet this year. He's just, the K's are elite. Atlanta, despite what they were able to kind of luck box their way into with Gesselman, and I'll roll through this again because I said this in our take one of the podcast, but Gesselman last night was an interesting case study in what makes DFS baseball, I think, fun/maddening at the same time. And so he goes out and is a train wreck in the first inning, right? Wow. Like walking guys. And then error throwing to first, that was kind of on him. Like a bloop double into the shallow outfield. Like, he was bad, but he really didn't get helped at all. I don't think he ever got out of the negatives on DraftKings. He scraped his way to the positive with like 3 points on FanDuel. And yet, we played him 100% across the board. And yet lineups still get there on GPPs and easily on cash games and GPPs as well, both sites, because the offense was so crazy. Like guys like the Shields and Ruhr went nuts and Turner got there and Harper, we had him in some spots. Do you find that to be, so we were on the right side of that last night. Do you find that to be like a good thing or a bad thing, or just sort of like a shrug your shoulders kind of thing, like in terms of DFS baseball?
Yeah, I wonder if part of this is actually the changes to scoring on the hitter's end, because it just used to be that you couldn't have your hitters outscore your pitcher pretty much. It wasn't a total impossibility, but it was pretty darn close. And the fact that we had multiple like 40 plus point hitters last night, or Turner 38, Harper 28, DeShields 40, Ruett 32, like totals like that just weren't really possible in the past. So I think it's a nice thing now, because it used to be if your pitcher got blown up the way Gesellman did in the first inning, you could just go and, you know, watch Netflix with your wife and just not worry about it. And now we just get to keep sweating it all night. So I certainly think that's good, because, you know, I talked about this. Actually, I was creating a video for a series at rostercoach.com in a joint partnership there. And I was talking about how, you know, DFS is very unusual. DFS baseball is so unusual because it's so much of it comes down to picking the right pitcher, and it still is that way, but it's less so than it has been in the past. And I find that to be a positive change.
Yeah. I tend to think it's overall good. And it helps when you have just like a comprehensive projection system that is good on both sides of the ball, I guess we would say here. Cause I think we've been really strong with hitters over the short term here, and extremely strong with pitchers. Last night's kind of debacle aside. And it's funny too, cause you know, I've taken a slightly different approach to just, especially cash games this year, where if there are situations like last night where the starting pitcher to me doesn't seem like head and shoulders above the rest. Like today it's Syndergaard, and you know, Scherzer, I probably could have put Scherzer in that Syndergaard category, but you know, Scherzer, Kershaw, Syndergaard, those guys, when they're in there, I have no problem just kind of hitching my wagon to their bright star and just going for it. But when it's, you know, when it's a guy like Esselman last night, and there's guys like Bundy, who was kind of chalky, which I was surprised about, and then Paxton, nights like that, I'm fine, even if our system is like saying Esselman like 100%, I'm fine kind of just saying like 30% him, 30% Bundy, 30% Paxton, where it's all sort of close, where no one's the clear-cut favorite of that group, I don't think. We're talking about percentage points at that point, like setting innings. Just to be, you know, if it's 5.45 to 5.5, like that's all it's going to take to make the difference of one guy over the other guy. Do you think that's like a correct strategy, especially for cash games, like spreading out the love a little bit to reduce the variance?
Yeah, it certainly can be. I mean, I think, you know, when it comes to setting cash game lineups in DFS MLB, you give up a lot less edge by hedging, I think, than you do in other sports, just because the margins are so much thinner and the variance is so great in terms of individual performance in baseball hitters in particular. That, yeah, you know, mixing things up a little bit, I think what it does is it keeps you sane. It's very easy to run to lose with seven lineups in a row on seven different nights, but if you're running the top 25 lineups from our site, say, it's going to be a lot tougher to lose. So yeah, I think that's pretty darn sound.
Yes, the variance that kills you, right? Because it kills you mentally, I think
well,
you can prepare.
It makes you quit, and quitting, if you're a winning player, taking a night off is the worst thing you can do.
Right. And so just, you know, because there are going to be nights where, you know, Turner Field doesn't produce 25 runs. It doesn't seem to have happened over the last couple nights, but there's just, or when I say Turner Field, I meant Coors Field, I was thinking Trey Turner. There's going to be those nights where it happens, where all the stars are aligning to look like this is the perfect play for an offense or a pitcher or whatever. And it just doesn't happen. And it's not like in basketball, you know, LeBron played 30 minutes instead of 35. Like, guys can just be horrible or not show up or do nothing. Like, so, you know, that's the thing that people, I think, have the hardest time with baseball. So, yeah, hedging out, you know, reducing variance, however you want to, you know, call what it is to just set multiple lineups. I do think that has upside as well as it has emotional and mental upside as well. Okay, so after Syndergaard, the other guy we talked about yesterday a lot was Martinez. And he's getting the early start against Toronto again. One thing Austin and I on the podcast yesterday discussed was whether or not Toronto was running bad or just bad. I'm falling now into they're just bad camp. Like, they don't really have, you know, Bautista, you mentioned this the other day, he's another year older. He could just be, he's a clear candidate for regression, and actually probably started to a little bit last year. And then they without Donaldson, they lose Encarnacion and replace him with Morales. That's a clear step down. The top of their lineup is absolute garbage with Pilar and Ezekiel Carrera kind of hitting in front of a possibly regressing Bautista. Do you think Toronto might still be a little bit overrated because they do have a couple of names in there, but they're just a team that we can actually just target in good matchups like for Martinez today?
Yeah, I mean, this highlights a big issue in baseball that you'll see to some degree in other sports, but it's the replacement level players. You know, teams, you need so many good players on your team anyway to compete, that typically the fall off between, like, you know, the guy who is your all-star third baseman to whoever you have coming up in the minors is like this huge, insane gulf where like the backup guy is just terrible and your prominent guy is good. And that's because teams will actively trade away their depth. You just can't, like in running, like football running backs, you tend to have a pretty good replacement for whoever your running back is because you just need two of them. And there's like only one dude who touches the ball 30 times a game out of the backfield. But in baseball, yeah, you just can't afford to have that kind of depth. So yeah, the Blue Jays, I'm with you. I think they're kind of off the deep end here and wouldn't be surprised to see things get even worse as the season progresses.
Yeah, no, I think I'm fine targeting pitchers against them. Martinez running a little bad this season in terms of ERA. The K's have been great. He's been walking too many guys. He doesn't strike me as a safe play just because there have been some control issues. For instance, on FanDuel, I'd much rather just roster Syndergaard. It's a little closer on DraftKings where you have to roster two guys. And with that in mind, so we have Syndergaard, we have Martinez. Mm-hmm. After those two guys, it's not, I don't know, is it clear to me that those are the two guys, or are there other pitchers that we can kind of just like target here having to roster two of them?
Yeah, sure. So I think another cash game option that you can look at for tonight is Corey Kluber. He's definitely a tier below Syndergaard in terms of Ross stuff and just outcomes as well. But, you know, generally an ace level pitcher, was excellent last season. Things have taken a slight step back for him this year. But actually a lot of that is on the back of going from his career home run rate, which is 0.86, up to 1.65 home runs per nine. I think when that comes back down to earth and kind of normalizes a little bit, he'll settle in as a mid-threes xFIP pitcher, and that's quite solid, you know, K per nine type of guy. The interesting question with him is, who are the real Astros? Because it's kind of a similar discussion between them and the Blue Jays, but in an opposite direction. So last year, they were third in the majors in terms of strikeout percentage against right-handed pitching. And this year, they're actually the fourth best in terms of striking out the least against right-handed pitching. So, you know, I don't know. Some of that's going to be personnel changes, but, you know, some of the young players developing and whatnot. What do you make of the Astros? Are they a good matchup right now, or are they kind of turning into like a modern-day kind of Royals-y sort of team where they hit okay, but mostly they don't strike out, and that makes them a stay away for cash game purposes?
Yeah, when I looked on their lineup, I would get worried about rostering a guy in cash against them. So like Springer is a talent, right? They add Reddick,
a young guy who's a huge K guy in the past who's not striking out as much. Yeah,
right. They add Reddick to the top of the lineup. That's a lefty bat that can do
yeah,
damage.
Really punish righties. Yeah,
Altuve, you simply can't strike out. The Correa is
I take your example.
100%. I know you can. It was like a collective view, and most of the other you people couldn't, but I know you can, buddy. You bring absolute gas when you throw. But so you get Correa, who's a real bat in the middle. Then they add a Beltran, switch hitter, and then they add a McCann in the middle of the lineup too. Like, that's a lot of, like, you know, they replace Gattis with McCann, and that's going to already make it harder for righty.
That reduces your strikeout percentage from that position by like 10%.
Right, and I can't remember who Beltran like necessarily plays, like Jake Marisnyk or something like that, but like, that's like the opposite problem of the Blue Jays, where they jettisoned a lot of their talent in favor of guys who were much worse. This is where they took some of the gaps that they had. The Astros took some of the gaps that they had, especially against righty pitching, and just made them better. So I know Vegas likes Kluber. I like Kluber generally as just a talent. But when you look down that batting lineup, I get pretty worried about his ability to really just kind of crush it against this lineup, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how I feel right now. McCann's an interesting one too, by the way. Leaves the Yankees, goes to the Astros. I wonder how the Yankees feel about this. Drops his K percentage from 20 down to 10 and is walking at 15% clip, which he hadn't done since his prime with the Braves. So, yeah, it's a kind of a crazy situation there. But, yeah, I think there's more. I think there's fire where that smoke is on the Astros, and I'm kind of with you. So in the other small sample size arena, so much fun with small sample sizes, by the way, this time of the season.
Oh, definitely.
Baseball's so hard this way, but it's Justin Verlander. So Verlander right now, you're getting him at a pretty steep discount to where you could have gotten him last year, and that's because, well, he's been much worse, right? He's doubled his ERA, again, 22 innings, but doubled it from 3-6. The K rate's down, the walk rate's up. Just generally looking like a worse pitcher. And of course, this wouldn't normally be a concern through 22 innings with a guy like Verlander, except for he took 2 years and 350 innings off of being a good pitcher in 2014 and 2015. So, you know, I was looking at him more carefully and trying to figure out, you know, is this a guy who we're going to be too high on because of kind of, you know, stuff left over from last season? But I actually think there's plenty to like about Verlander, especially for big tournament purposes. So the two metrics that I'm staring at the most here are the BABIP. Batting average on balls in play has gone up from 255 to 317 this season. His historical rate is 287, so he's 30 BABIP points higher. That's quite a huge difference. And then that's also driven down his left on base percentage, so that's the percentage of time that he strands runners, basically. That's gone from his career average of 73% down to 60%. I think if you see those two numbers normalize, I actually do think that will put downward pressure on the walks per nine as well, because I think some of that is, you know, the snowballing effect of bad starts, I think, is a very, very real thing. You can sometimes struggle with control when you're just kind of running bad. You get too cute because guys are getting seeing eye singles, whatever. So Verlander never touched a walk rate like this in the past. His very worst was 3 per 9. I think that comes down. The strikeouts probably come back up a little bit, and you wind up with a good pitcher. While I wouldn't probably want to trust that for cash games tonight against Seattle, it's not like a super matchup with some of their left-handed bats. I do think he's a very interesting big tournament play.
Yeah, that's the kind of the same thing. The Seattle's not like the Astros in this way. They don't have quite the names, but they have a middle of the lineup that does scare you a little bit with Cano, Seager. Cruz is much better against lefties, but still, he's not a nobody. They'll hit Dyson every once in a while up at the top of the lineup. He can cause you trouble up there. So, Seattle doesn't have the same. They don't scare you, but again, it's not one of those crazy. It's not a crazy great matchup for Verlander, and that's where the decision is going to come. Is it going to be worth it to pay down? This is on DraftKings. I'm speaking out specifically. It's going to be worth it to pay down that $2,000 off the 12 for Syndergaard for two pitchers who are good, but there's a lot of reasons you could talk yourself out of them for cash game purposes. I guess that's my concern. So that'll be something we evaluate as we go forward.
Yeah, for DraftKings, though, I feel like most people are willing to take, and I think us included, like you like to lock down an ace, but it's okay to have, you know, a more questionable guy in your B slot, in my opinion.
Oh no, it's not so much the B slot. It's that as of right now, Syndergaard's not there in the A slot, and that's where that's the position I'm going to sort of take a look at as we kind of get out of there, because it's like Kluber Martinez, Kluber Verlander. You got to scroll down a little bit till you start to see Syndergaard, and that's one of those ones where we'll evaluate. Say, you know, where does the safety come in, and just how much, how much safer is he relative to those other group when it comes to matchup and all that other stuff. And it's a work in progress, which we'll work on. We're looking at stacks for this afternoon slate. I mean, there is a Coors game. The wind's blowing in there, and the line has dropped a little bit. Do you think, is it going to be hard to play, considering that there's, I would say, three expensive pitchers you can choose from, and then you have Martinez there, who's just a tick less than the rest of those guys. How do you think that affects people playing the Coors game, where you're paying like the absolute premium on basically every single guy in that game?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly affects it. It's tricky with Coors because Coors is just a totally different hitting environment than anywhere else on the planet. So I think that's one of those situations where, you know, and it's kind of a cop-out answer, but we can sort of trust Vegas there and say, you know, Vegas also knows that what the weather's like, and they're still leaving this total on there. They're still letting bettors come in droves if they would like and bet the opposite side. So I think the market kind of corrects itself there on some level. And so, you know, while our system does take weather into account, we also do lean on Vegas more heavily for how to adjust performance based on weather, because it's just something that they've had a lot much longer runway and a much higher incentive to figure out than we do.
Let's say we're going to fade that game. And
straight up avoid it because you're worried it's going to get rained out. Yeah, was that what you were asking? I'm sorry. I thought you were asking.
No, I was asking more just like because of the prices, the pricing on it. Like if we're not able to kind of afford significant bats from there and pay up for guys like Syndergaard or Kluber or whatever.
I mean,
like,
you're not going to be able to do both. But last night, you know, going cheap on pitching wound up being for sure the right move. Like, you know, even people who played Paxton, you didn't want to not have Trey Turner so you can get Paxton.
Yeah, but there was no other real expense. I mean, there was like Lester and that was it. Like, there wasn't really a lot of other ways to pay up for pitching. I mean, that's not the case tonight. Like, today there are some guys with, like, it's mostly Syndergaard that I'm talking about, to be honest with you. But, in terms of how much you want to pay for this guy and sacrifice high run totals.
For cash game purposes, I'm definitely always going to prioritize. If it's close, I'm going to prioritize the pitcher just because, you know, again, I talked about this in my videos for Roster Coach, but pitchers just get points by showing up, by just throwing innings and getting strikeouts, which Syndergaard's going to do, anyone's going to do, just by stepping onto the mound. So, yeah, I'm totally with you there.
After that game, is there other value spots that we can kind of latch onto in terms of bats? Like, who's in a good spot here for this early slate?
Yeah, sure. I do think there actually is some stuff we can dip onto, and I'm sorry, I'm just trying to separate the early slate from the late slate. Okay, right. So, yeah, I mean, I'm also curious on your take on the Tigers right now, because Vegas sort of likes them relative to their competition against Hisashi Iwakuma today. Iwakuma is another guy who's put up good numbers in the past, and I feel like the Tigers are one of those teams that's, not looking as, they're looking a little more toothless than maybe they have in the past. Vegas still likes them for a pretty reasonable total. Iwakuma's just been, gone from kind of a pretty decent control pitcher to a guy striking out fewer than four batters per nine through 20 innings. What do you think about that spot?
I mean, they're pretty righty heavy, and so that the splits don't really necessarily work in their favor there. I mean, Miggy, well, he's actually no, he's on the 10-day DL. It's actually losing Cabrera that probably hurts them the most out of anything. So, like, when you lose a guy like that, it just drives. So I wonder what the run total would be if he was still in the lineup, right? Like, so they're 4.5
Sure.
somewhere in that range right now. He's worth, I don't know, 0.25 runs, something like that, I suspect.
I'd say
Maybe
half a run,
like something like that. So he. It makes a big difference not having him there. Now you get Tyler Collins coming pretty cheap. If he were to hit at the top of the lineup, he actually helps you a lot in terms of like just kind of fitting in some salary. The rest of these guys, Victor Martinez still coming pretty cheap on DraftKings, or excuse me, on FanDuel, where he for some reason is still catcher eligible. I don't
yeah.
think he's been catching forever.
For
If I'm not,
seasons now, yeah.
I keep meaning to look like how many games he's actually caught over the last couple of seasons, because I think FanDuel is like legit the only place he still qualifies as catcher for like. And that includes season-long leagues. I'll double check that, but I can't imagine this guy's been catching at all. I don't watch it. Go Tigers, but I don't watch every single Tiger game. So I guess that's my concern. No Miggy there. A lot of right-handed bats. Iwakuma does feels like he stinks,
But
but
doesn't
I.
Iwakuma, I just feel like for stack purposes, especially if you're showing up in a big tournament, Iwakuma is the exact kind of guy you can run hot against because basically everybody puts the ball in play, right? And just the ball simply getting in play and no one striking out and killing rallies and stuff like that, I don't know. I don't know if it's where I want to be for cash games necessarily, but I think if you just want to try to catch fire for a big tournament, you could do a lot worse than a guy who basically only strikes out opposing pitchers.
No, I agree with that. I do think you see people roster some of the Cardinals here. Casey Lawrence, I believe, is getting he it's either he okay, actually it kind of just doesn't matter because it's either Casey Lawrence or Matt Latos. So I'm seeing conflicting reports here about who is starting. It doesn't matter to me who's starting. They both stink. So this is one of those like great situations where our projections I don't think would change too much if it moved Lawrence or Latos into the first spot. I do think you see these guys pretty heavily owned, guys like Fowler coming pretty like Fowler's only 3-1 on FanDuel hitting at the top of the lineup. That's a great spot for him. Aledmys Diaz, Matt Carpenter kind of just rolling that top three of guys for the Cardinals. I do wish the Cardinals had a few more lefty bats. They're pretty again another team that's pretty righty heavy. Maybe you see Colton Wong or Greg Garcia get into the lineup today against the righty, but I don't know. I believe after the Coors game, they have the highest implied run total of the day. Your opinion doesn't change if it's Latos or Lawrence pitching for Toronto, right?
No, not really. I mean, I do feel like Lawrence is kind of like more likely to be that rare sort of bad, based on what we've seen from him this season. Basically, more than a walk per inning pitched this year is pretty impressive. The Ks per nine have not been great either. So, yeah, I would definitely prefer Lawrence, but yeah, it's six in one hand, half dozen in the other, if you know what I mean.
I don't
And
know what you mean.
I would take Latos just as happily, probably.
That's like math, and I'm just not. I'll get the spreadsheet out for that
Yeah, we'll
math,
talk
but
about it after. That's
it
okay.
definitely sounds
NBD.
suspect. You can get maybe a little bit of Matt Moore's not a great pitcher. He's not terrible. I don't mind some of the righty Dodger bats there, especially if Kiki, don't call me Enrique Hernandez, is hitting leadoff again for them. They
Sure.
push with Forsythe out. They've been pushing. They'll play a lot of matchups, especially at the top of the order. So guys like him and Turner and Puig, although I think Turner's a reverse splits guy. Matt Moore, not great. The wind is blowing out there in San Francisco with, I think, pretty heavy gusts. It was that same case last night. So there's a lot to kind of like about this early slate of games. I personally am drawn to slates where there's a clear top pitcher and there are just enough teams in good spots to with known bats. Like the Cardinals would be an example of
Sure.
that, right? Like the Toronto pitching situation is awful, and we kind of know what we're getting with at least the top three in Fowler, Diaz, and Carpenter. So, like, those are the kind of situations that I kind of gravitate more to, especially for cash games in terms of buy-in, because I do think they represent safety as opposed to, say, something like last night where we're staring at a group of pitchers that all sort of had their warts. So, that's kind of how I feel. Let's look at the.
By the way, real quick before you move on, just on the Victor Martinez note, just because I happened to pull up his Fangraph page,
I heard you typing curiously.
he has caught five games since 2011. So
bang, there you go. So so I guess in the FanDuel
since 2014.
Well, do you think it's just like someone like just hardwired into their system, like they're not just doing, like they're not just pulling their cron job like auto updates every once in a while? They're like, look, just make him a catcher. We're just gonna set it and forget it. He'll just be a catcher for the rest of his life.
Oh, yeah, no, this happened. We saw this in basketball too, where they're like, just somebody overwrote a formula for Terrence Ross, and he was just like 4,100 for 3 weeks, in spite of being starter, 90% owned. Like, there's definitely stuff like that that goes on. I have to think so.
Well, I wonder if it's like because he also doesn't play the field, so he doesn't qualify anywhere else either. Like, this is the DH problem. Like, this is why Evan Gattis is still a catcher also. Like, well, I guess Gattis will catch every once in a while, but I wonder if that's actually it. Like, if you don't ever actually play anywhere else, then...
He plays first base more often than he plays catcher, but...
Yeah, I don't know. Well, total joke. Okay, let's take a look real quick at the evening slate of games. So this is another one where they were in a situation where there's one good pitcher and a ton of bumps. And so we have Chris Sale. He is going against the Yankees. He's been... I don't know if he would win the Cy Young if they did it right now, but I he has to be close. He probably actually just would win the American League Cy Young. I believe he leads the league in Ks this year. Right, yeah, he's striking out 12.74 per nine. He has an ERA of 0.91, which is running a little hot on the XFIP, which is 2. He's been, I mean, these are like Kershaw-level numbers, basically.
Days and aces, days.
To start the season. He was able to get into the Blue Jays early when they when they've been doing pretty bad. But he's just been great. Do you see him as... against the Yankee team. It's in Boston. Boston's not great for lefty pitching. Seems to not really have mattered for Sale so far as far this year. Is he just like the clear-cut option here, and you'd be crazy to even think about fading him in cash games?
Yeah, I think so. He's just such a cut above all the other options. I mean, because the question you always want to ask yourself is, well, if not him, then who? If you get away from Sale, can you even play Wainwright since it's the second half of back of a doubleheader? I'm not even sure, but if you don't play him, you're going to play... I can't even believe these names I'm reading. I was going to say, like, Ricky Nolasco, Kendall Graveman, Jared Weaver, and Casey Lawrence. Like, these are all guys that we would be tripping over ourselves to stack against.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, the answer is no. Every single person's going to play Chris Sale. Yankees are no.
Yeah, on DraftKings, it's clearly Sale. I do think you can probably talk yourself into Taijuan Walker, maybe. He's seen his strikeouts tick up a little bit this year. He's actually striking out more than a batter per nine. The walks are kind of in where he's been this whole career, 2.5 to 3. So you'd like to see those come down a little bit, though. There's increasing evidence that it's not really going to happen. He's like not a good pitcher. He's not a great pitcher, but he's not bad. And when you get the ballpark's not great. San Diego better than last year, but still San Diego. So I do think you probably see people put Walker and Sale together in terms of the DraftKings late slate, just because that list of names that you rattled off was beyond bad. So it was funny, the A's don't have that high of a run line against Nolasco, but otherwise this is a pretty bum group. And then on the offensive side of the ball, I think it seems like it's just Diamondbacks or bust. Like they have the highest implied run total of the day, and that includes Coors. Like they're up over 6. They've been absolutely pounding the ball. They're going to give you real problems by staggering the righty lefties in the lineup. Like they go Pollock, Peralta, Goldschmidt, Lamb. Like that's pretty tough in that ballpark to get through that, and it's even tougher when your name's Jared Weaver. So I think it's going to be
just a beating.
Well, and this is just another one. Like, this is another reason I would love to just play this evening slate. It checks all the boxes of what I was talking about before. Clear-cut ace-level pitcher and awesome offense that you can probably afford just enough of the bats in if you've saved somewhere else to just give yourself a pretty high floor going in. So, I don't know. I don't know if I just did I sum up the whole slate pretty perfectly? I mean, is that it?
Yeah, it's just such a tiny slate. Like, it's tough to go too wrong, I think, almost on the bats. And I think you can justify stacking almost any team on this for big tournaments. Just because the pitchers are so horrendous that it just increases the odds that some oddball team just goes off and crushes somebody. We see this just happen all the time, right? Baseball, just random teams score 10 runs when they face bad pitchers. So, yeah, so that actually looks like kind of a fun one. I don't know. It's going to be maddening for big tournaments, I think. But, yeah, it could be a blast all around.
All right, that's it for us today. Hopefully you were able to listen to this in time for the 1 o'clock games. This is just the kind of slate of baseball that I like to see pulling together, so I'm pretty excited for today.
I see you in a good mood, buddy, because you were in a pretty dark place when I sent you the news that my web browser had crashed.
When there was a screenshot of the web browser crashing and us losing the podcast, I'm not wanting to break things up,
but Doug, that was very akin to a little first inning out of Mr. Robert Gesellman, and I think we pulled it out. I like to think of myself as kind of the Ryan Rua of this podcast. which is to say, not that great, but just can run hot from time to time. So here we are.
Every once in a while, pulls a grand slam out of your ass. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over /MLB, get you that free 3-day trial to the projection system that's informing most of what we stumbled through today. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, talk to you again tomorrow for a full slate of Friday baseball.
Can't wait, buddy.